please welcome in our new sponsor, Fishing Clash. Download Fishing Clash for free right now on your mobile phone by typing in Fishing Clash in the search bar of your Google Play or App Store. Open the menu in the top right-hand corner, choose the gift code section, and input my special code Taskmaster to get an awesome reward for a total value of $20. Enjoy chilling atmosphere after a hard working day. Get familiar with different types of fish species and their habits. You can choose one or two, or you know what you like the most. Explore amazing fishing spots worldwide from Florida to Kamchatka. Whether you prefer fly fishing, ice fishing, trolling, you'll admire the look of all the fishing spots available in this game. This game will help you remember how you went fishing with your dad when you were a kid. So download Fishing Clash today for free on your mobile phone by typing in Fishing Clash in the search bar of the Google Play or App Store. Open the menu in the top right-hand corner, choose gift code section, and input the special code Taskmaster to get a total value of $20. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the Fishing Clash, as it is a great casual time killer. Welcome to Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. I am your host, JP John Paz. Of course, joining me, the star of the show, the former WCW and ECW World Tag Team Champion, one of the greatest minds and bookers ever in the history of the business, the Games Master, the Taskmaster, the devil himself, Mr. Kevin Sullivan. Kevin, how are you doing today, sir?
Great, great. Just got back from WrestleMania, the convention, the signing, and then now I'm going out to Indianapolis this weekend. And if you're out there, come and see me, say hello, tell me what you and I are doing right and what you and I are doing wrong on our podcast. So,
love it. Now, I was kind of surprised with WrestleMania, but you were not surprised as far as the finish and Roman Reigns winning. How come you weren't caught by surprise at that? Not that I was really shocked by it, but I just thought maybe they were going to, quote unquote, finish the story with Cody. You kind of knew that they weren't. You were kind of thinking there's no way Cody was winning and Roman was definitely. Why did you think that?
Well, as we talked last week, I said there'd be a referee bump. Remember?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I also thought that if Cody went over, and I think he's spectacular, you know, his daddy and I were dear friends. He's going to get it eventually. But I also thought a friend of mine, I didn't go to the show, but a friend of mine went. The Brazilian Giant went, and he told me that Sammy got the biggest pop the first night by far. And maybe they, and I thought about this before when we were talking last week, that, you know, Cody came in and won the Rumble, but then got hurt. I wonder if they thought he may get some backlash from Sammy's fans, because Sammy, most people would never thought Sammy could be in this position that he's in after last year. And he was a great, great soldier. Last year, they had him at Johnny Knoxville and did a job for Johnny Knoxville. Yep. Now he's the hottest thing in the company, but he clawed and outworked everybody. I don't mean outworked everybody, but he busted his ass to get there. His interviews were so entertaining. His facial expressions. I really fell in love with his shit. What's the kick called? Hell of a Kick? When he runs. I mean, he's got just little quirky things like naming it that. And then Kevin and him make a great team. The Bloodline story, I think it's even better than the NWO. And I was right in the middle of the NWO. They come out of here now with these guys as hot as hell, meaning the Bloodline. They got Cody, Kevin, Sammy, and I think you could have McIntyre in that group. I mean, that you would have, and then Seth Rollins. That's just off the top of my head. There's five guys you can have go against Roman. This thing could be stretched out to next year's WrestleMania. I mean, I know they want to probably get him over the 1,000 days, and deservedly so. And I mean, now that Brock's turned heel too, there is a connection with Brock and the Bloodline because of Paul. I'm sure they have something up their sleeve. I think they're going to take off from here. I mean, they got an amazing storyline. And it was like I told you last week, to get that snowball up the hill, you got to bust your ass and push and slide back. But once it's on top and you push it the other way, it takes a life out of its own. They almost can't make mistakes because that day, Sammy said, oh, he's not feeling Usy. They all broke up laughing by biting their lip and stuff. And then they made a T-shirt feeling Usy and made millions. I mean, they're just on the right road right now. Everything's turning up roses for them. And I think whenever they pull it, it's either going to be SummerSlam, but I think they'll get to next year's WrestleMania. That when Cody finally wins, it's going to be huge. And good luck to them. They're doing well. And on the other flip side, AEW is doing well now too. So it's a great time to be a wrestling fan. I think when I was there, I went for the convention. There was wrestling from Tuesday till Tuesday in the L.A. area, JP. Wow. One night, somebody told me there was, I think it was Thursday night or Friday night, there was over 15 shows in the L.A. area.
Jesus. Yeah. A little much, but obviously they all were probably packed to the gills.
Well, I mean, they all did well. I mean, I forget who told me, Roland, who works for the Brazilian Giant, went to a bunch of shows. He's got a bunch of friends in almost in every federation. You know, some of the buildings were 500 capacity. Some of the buildings were right at 1,000, and some of the buildings were 200. And he said that everyone he went to might not have been completely sold up where they were packed. So good. It's good to be a wrestling fan right now. And the good thing I saw was 3 years ago, I talked to this guy and his posse from Donegal in Ireland. And that's where my family's from. And I hadn't seen him, and he came up to me and we reconnected. It was great. I mean, it's just think that they get people from all over the world every year come to this event. What do they have? 80, over 80,000 every night, both nights?
Yep.
It was, 163,000?
Yeah, 162, yep.
Okay. See, that's amazing. Amazing.
And the thing is, people were saying, oh, maybe Roman Reigns should have lost. But then you go to the ratings, and the ratings are up for the first time in forever. I mean, I think it's been 20 years since you saw like a rating bump like that. I mean, it's literally probably 2002. It's been that long since the ratings were actually up year over year.
And, you know, I remember when people, it was a good sign. We'll get to Florida when Dusty and I would work, and somehow he would end up seeing the lights, whether it was me, Ron Bass, Mark Lewin. We'd say, well, next week's going to be good. The people are hot. I remember it was a good thing for the people to be hot. And I don't think when the people are hot, they're saying, well, he should have won, he should have won. Wow. Were you giving Hunter tips? Were you giving Hunter ideas what to do? Did you think about the repercussions if you gave the belt to Cody and after all that time, he might have got some flack from Sammy's fans because Sammy's worked hard, or he might have been re-injured? I mean, there's a lot of things you can think about, but I got to tip my hat to Hunter. You know, we always thought, most people in the wrestling business thought he was very smart. But my hat's off to him. I think this puts him right up there with his father-in-law. When his father-in-law was on, he was on. Puts him up there with Dusty, puts him up there with Heyman, Cornette, as smart, Eddie Graham, as smart guys in the business, and I don't say that too often. Congratulations, congratulations, and now hopefully he'll be able to continue to do this, but we could kind of get into that if you want, JP. Is he going to be allowed to continue his great work?
I don't know. It seems like Vince is already butting his head. And if you saw Monday Night Raw, I think it was 20 minutes of actual wrestling in the 3 hours, which is definitely a Vince thing. Triple H usually puts on some long matches. So it was like, wow, that's definitely a change. There was some weird stuff that, I don't know, wouldn't have been booked under Triple H, but it seemed like it was a Vince thing. I'm hearing rewrites. I'm hearing redos, all this other stuff. They cut Seth Rollins off before he was even going to cut a promo. I mean, it just screamed of a Vince show, which sucked because WrestleMania was good, and obviously Triple H was on a roll.
Let's think about this. I agree with you. I didn't see the show because I was getting home Monday. Do you think that because of the sale, they said, let's go back and put Vince in place until we can analyze what we're doing?
Seems like it to me. And it seems like after the sale, Vince has even more power. Now he's an executive chairman over the whole merger, over the both companies. So it's like, wow, he somehow got more power. I know technically the Endeavor company owns 51 and he owns 49, or WWF owns 40, WWE, excuse me, owns 49. But he got put into a higher position because now he's executive chair and he got five of his own board members under him. So it's crazy. It's like, oh, shit. Like, he's just like, well, you know what? I'm going to be doing creative again. Like, it's not good.
And that's when I thought was the strange part. Not only did he come back, he brought five of his posse with him, you know, his federales. They're going to do what he wants.
Yep.
And that's a pretty heavy stroke. But, I mean, I really... You know, he was terrorizing when I knew him. I never knew how really smart he was. He was green when he came. But, I mean, and I can tell you what, he has Heyman there, and mm-hmm. Paul doing a great job. But I hear that Roman's very bright. I hear that Sammy's bright. And then I hear Kevin's smart. Obviously are. They spent 20 years in the independence just about, didn't they, Sammy and Kevin?
Mm-hmm. Just about.
So they learned how to manipulate, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but put matches together and manipulate finishes and things like that. And Roman comes from, you know, the dynasty. And I have a thing about second and third generation guys. They seem to have a different slant on the business, and they see it quicker because they've been raised in it. So hopefully it goes back, and because he's deserved it, Hunter. He deserves this. It wasn't just handed to him. He waited a long time, and he's come out and hit a home run. So let's hope that it stays in his hands.
To be honest, you could actually like tell and see, to me anyway, I mean, I know people have different opinions, other people will disagree, but you could see the show was better, the titles meant more. I know everything was in a positive direction. Vince comes back for one night, and everything, the show sucked except for Lesnar beating up Cody at the end. The rest of the show sucked.
Yeah, and the other thing was, you know, I watched the highlights of WrestleMania. You could see there was a special energy there. Because, first of all, they had to walk almost a football field to the ring, right?
Wasn't that crazy?
Yeah. Yep. And, you know, it was a special. And the people bought everything. And I'm not a big proponent about that 1-2 count being used to death, but they used it perfectly. It was I thought, I want the young guys to watch Cody and Roman's match. They gave a incredible performance. The story they told in that match was incredible. They had the people eating out of their palm of their hands before they ever locked up, because it took them a while to lock up. You remember that?
Yep.
Their facial expressions from Roman, Cody's facial expressions, and circling one another. They tied up like what wrestling is supposed to be, collar and elbow, fought hard, locked up hard. They weren't unsafe, but they were stiff. Solid, like they would get a slam or some bump that Roman would take it. He'd sell it. His facial expressions when he was selling it, his body movement when he was selling it, and vice versa for Cody, too. It was very well laid out. Well, we called last week there'd be a referee bump and all much to Dusty, but I just thought it was very successful, and it would have been great. And I didn't see it, but it would have been great if they could follow up with Hunter's Monday Night Raw. If it was Hunter's completely, I would love to see what he would have done.
Me too. Very, very weird. But I do like the direction with Cody and Brock, because it kind of makes an interesting thing with, like, Brock can't challenge for the title anymore. Why would he want to team with a guy that can? You know, it made perfect sense after I realized it. I was like, oh, of course he's going to be bitter and destroy this guy. Like, oh, you think you're going to get another title shot? And I can't? So he just beats the shit out of him. I thought it was great.
Yeah, and then you have the connection with Paul. You know?
Yes. Yep. Did Paul know? Yes.
Yeah. So there's a lot of good stuff there. So anyway,
let's talk about the topic at hand. Let's talk about championship wrestling from Florida. Let's go all the way back to 1972, believe it or not. I know you made a big waves in the 80s there, but you actually started out there in 1972. How the hell did you make your way all the way out to Eddie Graham's championship wrestling championship wrestling from Florida in 1972?
I had told you I started Montreal when there was two territories back then in Montreal, two companies rather. It was the Rougeaus, one company, and Mad Dog had the other company. But there was his name was Pat Girard. He wrestled as Pat Curry in Europe and in Canada. He was in, when he was in England, he had a Rolls Royce take him to his events. He was so over in England that he would work, and this isn't a mistake, he worked in London 10 times a week minimum. He worked twice a night some nights to make it to 10. And he had trained a bunch of people. He had trained Ronnie Garvin. He had trained Gilles Pison. He had trained Terry Garvin. He had trained Pat Patterson. He, Martels, anybody. He helped Carpentier when Carpentier first came to Canada. So I started working for him, and then I was working in Brooklyn, 234 Broadway in Williamsburg, upstairs. I was the only angle in the gym at the time. And what happened was Ramon Perez was going down to West Virginia when West Virginia was a territory. The Madrid brothers, Jan and Jill Madrid, they owned the territory. And I went down there and I started working for them. And then I ended up working for Dutch Mantell's brother in South Carolina. They had TV there, a local TV. And then from there, I ended up going to Florida. One of the guys that worked Florida, Johnny Heidelberg, called and got me booked, and I ended up going to Florida. It was fluky how I got there.
When you look at it, is that the place you wanted to be? Did you think that it would fit you well? Like, what did you think when you got there?
Well, I was brand new. I was hoping. Just, I didn't care where they put me. They could have put me on Ragnar, Tibet. I was going to go. I wanted to be in the wrestling business. And it was an opening, and I made the most of it, I think, and I was lucky.
When you look at championship wrestling from Florida, was it, like, the place where guys wanted to go? I mean, were people excited about championship wrestling for Florida?
Oh, yeah. It was, first of all, Eddie Graham bought in there in 1960, end of 60 or beginning of 61. Eddie, I just realized this. Yesterday I was reading one of the books on pro wrestling by what's his name? I'll get hold on.
Kevin's getting the book.
Hornbaker. Tim Hornbaker.
Oh, yes, I know Timmy. Yep.
Yeah, and this is the third Madison Square Garden we got now, right?
Yes.
The second one, and that going back to. I think it closed in 68. Yeah, maybe I'm wrong, but I think it was 68. That Eddie Graham and Dr. Jerry Graham and Rocca and Perez had the largest house in the history of that building. So Eddie had learned, how to book, because he was actually the unofficial booker for Vince. And everybody knew how smart Eddie was, so guys wanted to go down there. The territory, until Eddie got there, had just been a winter territory. They didn't run in the summer, which was crazy, because when I was down there, the summer was our best time. And he had great talent. He brought in his friends, Johnny Valentine. He brought in Mark Lewin and Don Curtis. He brought in, you know, by that time, Eddie was very influential with the NWA. He would bring the Lou Thesz and him were very good friends. Lou would come in. Dory Funk Sr. and Eddie were dear friends. He'd bring them in. So it was a very, it was a hot spot until the very end.
So what did you think about Eddie Graham when you first met him?
The first time I met him, he looked like a star. Blonde hair, big shoulders, not a giant in height, but he had something special. Sharp dresser, could do anything. And the first night I was in Tampa, Tampa was one of the few dress rooms that we all dressed together. And you would hear guys that you get there, you'd be there on time or before the time you were supposed to be there. And everybody would be talking to one another. When Eddie walked in and gave a finish, it was like guys were studying to go to college. You know, I remember people going up to another guy to say something, and the guy put his hand, no, I got to go with this finish. It was intense. He was, you know, I told you that story where he laid out a finish and I explained it to you how long it was. It was probably about a 3-minute finish. And during the finish, in the middle of the finish, there was supposed to be 3 drop kicks, along with head scissors, monkey flips, dive off the top rope for a crossbody, get knocked out of the ring. It was a continuous finish. And I feel proud of myself when I walked up. I said, "Hey, boss, what'd you think?" He said, "Where was the 3rd drop kick?" I mean, and he gave 8 or 9 finishes that night. So he was pretty amazing. And he was very well respected. Very well respected.
Did he like you, though, like off the bat?
I think so, because he invited me to go to Hiro Matsuda's gym and wrestle Mike Amateur. Yeah.
So did he take you under his wing right away, or that happens later on, like as far as learning the business?
I think what happened was I was supposed to, how I got there was Robert Fuller and I were tag team partners in Nick Goulas's territory and Robert's grandfather, Welsh, you know, Roy Welsh. And Robert and I were supposed to go to Australia together when Barnett owned it as a young tag team. But right then, Jim, I believe, sold it to Tony Kalani. No, what happened was, I get it now. Robert and I were supposed to go to Australia because his father was...
You were saying move Australia and flying?
Yeah, we were supposed to go out to Australia. And Jim ended up buying part of Florida. So his father and Eddie didn't go to Australia. They went for a short period, and they saw that it wasn't going to work. So they redirected me to Robert to Florida. And when I got down there, Eddie watched me work, and I guess pretty solid for being so green. And Mike had just started, and Mike and I were the same size, just about. Mike had been a powerlifter. I had been powerlifting. So Eddie, I think this, you know, he was going to do what he wanted. But I think he went to Robert's father, Buddy, and said, "Hey, you know, why don't we put Ronald and Robert together and Kevin and Mike together? Maybe we can get two babyface teams over rather than one. So that's what happened.
So when you start really, you know, wrestling down there and you're working for Championship Wrestling for Florida, who are some of the guys when you first started that you worked with? I know Buddy Colt is down there, and I think even Sputnik Monroe is down there. But who are some of the guys that you were working with?
Paul Jones. You know, number one, Paul Jones. They did a – Bob Roop was there. He had just come off the Olympics, you know, prior – what was it? What Olympics were Bob in, the 68?
I think so, yeah, right? It was 19
Mexico City.
Yep.
Yeah, so he was just coming out of the Olympics, and Bob was in fabulous shape then. Malenko had turned babyface, you know, a couple of years prior to that. So he was, you know, a homesteader, they used to call him. You know, he had his house there, and he was, you know, once you buy a house, they used to get very nervous that you could run into somebody that had some money and maybe run opposition. But and we had Dickie Slater, Austin Idol, great group of guys that came out of there. Idol, Slater, Paul Orndorff, Ricky Steamboat, who ended up going to Vern, but I think I mentioned this. You know, Ricky Steamboat, when he was a sophomore in high school, got to the finals state wrestling tournament in Florida. He lost to a senior. That senior was Mike Graham.
Wow. I think you mentioned it before. Yeah, that's pretty crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. So they, you know, the group of young men they put out, you know, and got in the wrestling business was, I think, just about as good as any. Well, hey, they got Hogan in the business, right?
Right.
After they broke his leg or ankle, you know. So, yeah, I mean, you know, Eddie had donated, I think it was $50,000 to put a amateur wrestling room at the University of Tampa. Until that time, they had just, you know, pull mats. Eddie had designed a room. He gave scholarships, and not just for University of Tampa. He would have the United States Championship, Amateur Wrestling Championship, were in Florida because of Eddie. Eddie paid for everything. So he had a very, very high profile in Florida, doing great things for people.
When you look at Mike Graham, what was your relationship with Mike? Because I know they put you guys as a tag team. You win the tag titles together very early on. What was the relationship like with Mike? Did you guys hit it off right away?
Yeah. Mike really helped me a lot. I mean, I do things now that I had never done really. First time was with Mike, like diving, and Eddie used to take me and Mike fishing all through the Caribbean, and I had never dove in Boston, you know what I mean? Too cold, but I learned to dive there, got my scuba license. Just, it was like, you know, when the Wizard of Oz, when it goes from black and white to color.
Yep.
That's what it was like when I got to Florida after leaving Boston. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I didn't leave Boston because our manor burnt down and we lost all our horses. You know what I mean? So it was quite eye-opening, you know what I mean? Getting there, I got there in January too. And you get there and you look around and you're flying in and you see all these swimming pools and the sun and the coconut trees. it was a really a wonderful experience. First time I went to Florida, I guess I'll always have a very, very soft spot for Florida. I really like Florida.
When you left and kind of came back, like, why do you leave? Why do you come back? Is that one of those things where it's like typical territory stuff? Hey, yeah. I'm going to work there in 72, 73, 74, you know, but then I'm going to leave for a while and then come back and basically maybe a little bit of 75, but really you come back in 77. Is that one of the things where it's just typical territory wrestling? You just go leave the territory and come back and kind of, you know, get rejuvenated, if you will.
I made two huge mistakes back to back. I had had the 2 year run there, and you know, that was a territory where every night was the same. You know, Monday was West Palm, Tuesday was Tampa or Fort Myers, Wednesday was Miami, Thursday was Jacksonville, Friday was Fort Lauderdale or Tallahassee, both small towns. And then Saturday was either Daytona, St. Pete, Lakeland, or Sarasota. And they were big clubs, right? We have great cards. And then Sunday was Orlando. So you go in those towns week in, week out, week in, week out. So it got to a point where, you know, they said to me, Watts is very high on you. You know, I'm so dumb, I don't even realize what they're saying. You know, it's going, oh, that's nice. It's going over my head a couple of weeks later. You know, Bill called and he wants you going for a shot. Oh, that's cool. So then it finally dawns on me what's happening. And I got booked in Calgary. Rather than going a couple of states over, I ended up driving from Tampa to Calgary.
Oh, geez, that's a long drive.
Yeah. And I got there in the middle of the winter. It was just the experience I had there was good, but it was just such a change. Middle of the winter, really exceptionally long trips, dangerous on the road, was gone all the time. And, you know, they had said to me, you know, and I guess I was ignorant. They were nice enough to get me, because I met with Watts one day too. They had me come to the office. Bill was in town. He said, hey, we got, that's when I told him I had booked myself in Calgary. And they said, we really want you to come to Louisiana, blah, blah, blah. We got plans. He started, I said, well, sorry, I'm booked already. Well, I could see it on Eddie's face, like, what the hell is wrong with you?
Yeah.
And I stayed, 6 weeks in Calgary. I drove back to Boston. And Eddie got me booked in North Carolina. And so I worked in North Carolina. And after that, I did the same mistake again. That Johnny Heidelman that I told you earlier sent me to Vince Sr. I was the first guy that was from there that didn't start out there that I know of. I've been in the business almost 6 years. I get booked there, and I really never realized how well I did there until I was looking at one of those books where it has all the records of the matches. I was with Andre as his partner at least 40 times. I was, you know, and the other thing was, I was always in a good spot on in the garden. I would put the guy over that was going to work with Bruno next, whether it's Hanson or Brody, and then the following shows, I'd get a win. I'd be tag team with Calhoun, and we'd work against the Executioners, Stud and Kowalski, and we work in DQ, so he treated me really good. So, you know, in that position, I should have been able to, at most, 8 months. Well, I was here 15, and the first thing, I was at TV, and Vince came up, Senior came up to me and said, "Kevin, you've really done a great job here. I'd like to appreciate it." And I said, "Well, I appreciate it." And he said, "I want you to do me a favor." I said, "Sure." He said, "You need to find a place to go, but I don't care if it takes you another 6-8 months. He said, "You're always welcome here, but I don't want to start having to beat you." Yeah, he said, "I want to make it easy for you to come back here." So I thought, okay. I go at night and call Mike. I don't want to be a burden, you know what I mean? I don't want to have to see him and him say, "You got to play shit," right?
Yep.
So I call Mike. Mike says, "Let me look at the book." And he said, "I'll call you back in an hour." Call me back in an hour. I said, "Yeah." He said, "We're going to," and Slater at the time, you know, Dickie had been a heel baby face. He said, "We're sending Dickie to Atlanta with Bob Orton." He said, "And we'll be light a tag team." He said, "Why don't you come back and we'll put you and me together and we'll decide what to do." I said, "Okay." 2 days later, Vince calls me and says, "I want you to do me a favor," same line. I said, "Oh, what?" He said, "I want you to go to L.A. for LaBelle." He said, "You're going to be on my payroll, and whatever you make extra for LaBelle is extra." I said, "Vince, I just got myself booked in Florida." He said, "Well, do you want me to call Eddie? Do you want to call him or Mike? And I'll get you out of it." I said, "Well, I really want to go home for a while." Brother, I got to Florida. Mike stopped working. And I had no really position there. And like, hey, it looked like I was ungrateful, I think. And it was just one of those things. I was ignorant.
Right. You
know? I just didn't know. But I should have learned on the first lesson. You know what I mean? And, I mean, but I believe that shit happens for a reason. I never would have done what I did if it didn't work out the other way. But I always liked L.A. When I was a kid, I ran away to L.A., to Santa Monica for a month, you know? So,
Yeah.
And, but it looked to me as, and I learned that instantly, it looked to me like I didn't give a shit, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And that wasn't the way I wanted them to take it, because Senior was very good to me. I'll tell you a real quick story. They had, when I was there, they really had two ends. They had the New England, Boston end, and then they had the Pennsylvania, New Jersey end. And you know how I told you about the book, Vince's book, how I learned, right? About booking?
Yep.
So one time I'm in Boston end that for a week, and it ends up Boston Garden on a Saturday night. But I look, and Thursday I'm in like, I think I was in, what's the southernmost town they used to run? Was that York, Pennsylvania? In Pennsylvania. Was it York?
Maybe, yeah.
That's a long way away south, right?
Kind of, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Well, there was a town running in Boston, like 15 minutes from my house. So I went to Vince, and I said, and I was in a middle position on that card, you know what I mean? It was that kind of time when Vince would put his guys that were leaving that were great, like Sparisario on a guys like in that ink that had Russell Bruno and yep. give them, you know, make sure they got good pass. So I went to him and I said, Vince, I always appreciate what you do for me, but I'm in York and I could be in Arlington, which is 10 minutes from my house. He said, oh, okay. He said, are you in the same position on the card? I said, yeah, yeah. He said, okay, and if you're not, I'll look, make sure that you get taken care of the same. And we're, now we're talking, what, $30, $40, but that was big back then, right?
Yeah.
And he changed the card. He did it for me a couple of times. You know, so where I'm going with this is for what I did and stuck him in my, it looked like I stuck him up, but it wasn't that I stuck him up. It was just plain being dumb.
When you kind of cement yourself back in the 80s to Championship Wrestling Florida, obviously after the WWF days with Vince McMahon, you're back with Eddie Graham. And I guess it would be around 1982-ish, right? You right. turn heel and you turn into the devil. Where did that come from? How did that come about? Like, just tell us about kind of you really kind of, you know, going to the dark side, if you will.
What happened was I turned heel in Georgia on, I don't know if it was Steve Kern first or Tony Atlas first. But Tony and I had been the World Tag Team Champions there, and I turned on them. And we actually made the news because that's the year the we boycotted the Olympics. And it was on NBC News with Jane Kennedy, and she said, the United States won tonight the gold medal and showed it. But I turned heel on Tony, and I also turned heel on Steve Kern. So Jerry Jarrett and Jim Barnett were very close. They came down, and Jarrett made a trade. I forget who he sent for us, but he sent me and Kern up there, and I forget who. I think he sent Buzz Sawyer down and somebody else. And so Kern and I went up there, and I started working heel. And again, I think I screwed up. I said, oh, I'm going to Knoxville. I should have. I was having a very good run there. I was working with Lawler or Dundee, or me and Honky were against Lawler and Dundee. So I just, the trips sometimes got me too. They had long trips. So I went to Knoxville. Blackjack gave me the book and I was a heel. So when I got ready to go, Jack sold Knoxville to Barnett, and Jack and Barry ended up going to Florida. And Dusty was making shots in Georgia when I was there. And Dusty said, hey, why don't you come back? Because I was a heel at that point. And I said, yeah. And he said, what kind of angle can we do? And he wanted me to do something with Mike. And I came up with the idea of being the babyface split, that half the babyfaces trusted me, half the babyfaces hated me. And we went from there. And that's, it kind of just progressed because of MTV, you know, the Michael Jackson Thriller video. Billy Idol. The horror movies, the genre was exploding again. You know, you got to remember that was all the remakes of The Wolfman, Dracula, Alien, you know, Michael Myers movies, all of them exploded. So I kind of got that and mixed it up. And then, you know, punk rock was out and heavy metal was out. So I kind of blended it all together. That's how I kind of got that idea.
Did you really believe in the devil worshiping? Did you really? Because a lot of people think it was very, very real.
Yeah, well, here's the thing about devil worshiping. You know, people that are real devil worshipers don't believe in the devil or God. And, you know, people just come out with things and don't understand things. That's what's wrong right now. The country is so divided because no one wants to stop and listen and maybe go into things and find out the truth. But no, I mean, my cousin, who's like our brother, is a priest. And he used to love the angle. He said, because eventually God wins. And he said, I like the angle. Hmm. And yeah, I mean, and I never used the word devil. I was using the word a Buddha Dean.
Yeah, yeah. So,
who happens to be a fertility god for the Hindus. And I was talking about things that most people don't understand. I mean, I have some pet peeves. When people don't know where places are, it drives me crazy, I guess because I love geography and history. You know, and they don't know who conquered who, you know, like Sicily, I loved when I went there because I didn't realize how many people conquered Sicily. You know, even the Irish conquered Sicily, and they were real barbarians. You know, I didn't realize they had a feudal navy. And so I like to find out about places. But I'd like to have some knowledge, and I don't want to spout out things that I don't know anything about. And I think that's where I had hit it on that, where they said, oh, he's devilish. He's talking to the devil, a Buddha Dean, and the inside jokes on them, you know what I mean? And then yeah. It was things where I used to do with an MVP brought this up to me. When he was a kid, he used to, you know, he's from Florida, and he's doing a magnificent job. Kudos to him. But his father was a Mason. And Gordon was a Mason. He had the ring, and I'd always say, I'd let words escape like, they're always working. It will never be finished. You're a wise man from the East. And MVP told me he would understand some of his father's writings because he's a Mason. And he said he thought I was really, really bizarre. And that I was in some kind of Illuminati. He didn't think devil worship, but he thought some kind of Illuminati because I knew about the East.
It's funny, like if you look at the Prince of Darkness and doing that stuff, a lot of people thought that you were highly invested in like being like that, because they said they'd see around town like that, and like, this guy's really nuts, this guy's really crazy. So as far as like you being small in stature, as far as height wise, it didn't work as far as people not being intimidated by you. They still were scared of you because they thought the Prince of Darkness was real.
Yeah, and the other thing is, I thought that was something that I had to really convince myself that if I didn't stay in script like MJF is now,
mm-hmm. Yep.
And kudos to him, that I'm talking about this weird stuff. My face is painted. I got bones around my neck. So what am I going to go? They're going to see me out on a Sunday afternoon at one of the local watering holes, and I got a polo shirt on and a pair of shorts and sneakers. I couldn't. It would just have killed it. And people would have thought, ah, that's all bullshit. And I just wanted them to buy it. And I was lucky enough, I believe, that I did it that way, that I got quite a long run out of it in different territories. Then I expanded. I was lucky I expanded into different territories because there was a while I would work in Florida maybe once every 3 months in Miami or Fort Lauderdale because I was living in the Bahamas. And then I was working in Puerto Rico and I was working in San Antonio for Luke. I like to just say, you know, Luke just lost Butch.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, they were wonderful, wonderful guys. I always had a very great relationship with both of them. Butch was a extremely, extremely talented guy. You know, he worked on his, can you imagine walking on the side of your ankles for 8 years? That's what he almost died from one time. He had septic so bad. He had broken his ankles and never got them fixed. So, you know, turn your feet where you're on the side of your foot. He walked like that for 8 years. They said that he had it so bad when he passed out, he had septic through his body. This is about 15 years ago. That when they cut it open, it was like crazy glue came out and it stunk. He was a very tough, tough guy, but wonderful. But I was working for them, Southwest, Puerto Rico, and Savoli. So because of that gimmick, got me a chance to expand and go different places.
And not only that, I mean, you basically created an army of darkness. You had the Prince of Darkness was yourself, but you had the army of darkness. You had Mark Lewin, who was the Purple Haze, Mike Davis, Bob Roop, Locke. You had Luna Vachon. You eventually had the Fallen Angel, who was Woman. I mean, you guys obviously had big-time feuds with Barry Windham, Blackjack Mulligan, and Dusty Rhodes. Of course, would be, you know, the end-all be-all would be the big feud. But, man, you created a faction there, and it's funny that, you know, everybody was scared shitless of all these guys.
Yeah, and we had Curtis, too, you know, King Curtis, my fave. So we did well. I mean, and we had great baby faces to work with. I think the only guy that ever turned on us was superstar Billy Graham. And here we were wrestling superstar Billy Graham, you know what I mean? He did those great promos. Did you ever see them when they were just still shots? He went in the desert and he voiced over them?
Yeah, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, he was great, superstar. And, you know, like you said about the difference in size, when we did this angle, I was wondering, because Billy had come back from the just about from the dead. Now he looks like the old superstar, the WWF champion. I'm thinking, wow, the people going to buy this. After we did the angle, the first time we went back to was Lakeland, you know, and we did great business, and Billy sold for me like a king, and I had a great run with Billy. And I thought, you know, I had been in New York when he was the champion, and I'm saying to myself, wow, how time changes your life, you know what I mean? I was, you know, just starting really in New York, and I had been you know, and I guess in the middle of the card, and he was the champion. Now I'm getting to work with him. It was great.
That is amazing, too, being able to work with not only Dusty, but superstar Billy Graham as well. And I know we'll talk more about Dusty on a future episode, just separately, Dusty and the feud and everything, because I don't want to get too into it with him, because then we'd be talking forever about Dusty.
Right.
But it's one of the things, is that the biggest feud you had in Florida, because Dusty was the most over guy in Florida, obviously a god of wrestling. You think that was the tippy top for you? I know NWA Florida champion is big, but the feud with Dusty probably was the tops for you in the territory, right?
Yeah, and then we had so many angles that worked so good that they just were home runs. And it was because of Dusty. You know, maybe I get 20% credit, but it was Dusty, the way he sold, the way he made it, did interviews, bringing Blackjack or Barry in at the right situation, or bringing Andre in. Super Slaughter Sunday was right after the Super Bowl, you know what I mean? They brought Dusty and Andre against me and Dusty. I mean, me and Mark against Dusty and the Giants, you know what I mean? It was like they advertised it, Super Slaughter Sunday, like we were going to get killed. Dusty was a genius.
When you look at the territory, is that your favorite place you ever worked?
Here's the thing. Yes, but one of the places nobody ever talks about where I worked was I probably drew bigger money than I even did in Florida. When I was in San Francisco, I had the inevitable task of following Ray Stevens and Pat Patterson. But Bob Roop and I did this angle with my father, my legit father, and Roop shoulder broke my father in the comp house. And you know who Dr. Mike Dano is?
Doesn't sound that familiar.
Okay, I saw him at these conventions. Yeah, he's from San Francisco, and he reminded me. We were drawing 12,000 to 14,000 people, me and Roop. And we had a great card underneath it, but I had a wonderful time there. I actually went back to college while I was wrestling because the trips were so short. I only took two classes, but it was good. I went back to college, and it was a beautiful place to live back then, San Francisco. I lived in Fremont, which is about 30 miles outside of San Francisco. But I'd go into the city and the fabulous restaurants. And I really like San Francisco.
When you look back at Championship Wrestling Florida, what's kind of the legacy? Because I know, obviously, Eddie's death played a huge role. I mean, he kills himself. And you think that's kind of just – you got to tie that into the legacy of Florida, right, of the territory?
Yeah, it was it was like a pall came over the state of Florida. I mean, it ended up, you know, like, it was like that song about Camelot. It was so perfect, and then it just felt horrible ashes. It was a tough, tough thing.
When that happened, that's basically the beginning of the end, right?
It was the end. It was the end. And I, about 4 months ago, 5 months ago, I saw Mike's daughter. And I was there when she was born. She's just a little, cute little kid. Her name is Nicole. Well, her grandfather, her father, her brother, her great-grandfather, and her uncle all killed themselves.
Oh, my God.
So let's start again. It's the great-grandfather, Eddie's dad, Eddie, Mike, Stephen the brother, then Eddie's brother just in the last couple of years killed himself. He had cancer, which might have been the problem, but I said to Steve Kerr when I was talking to him about this, can you imagine how uneasy it must be for Nicole, who's Mike's daughter, when she leaves the room for her child? I mean, that could play in your head, right? If your mother ever gets depressed and you look at what happened to your family, I mean, that's so far from a normal routine. The great-grandfather, grandfather, father, son, uncle, that's five.
Crazy, yeah. Nuts.
Yeah.
I've heard it could be like a gene, which I've never heard before, but I heard somebody, I think maybe it was Conan, was saying that it's a gene in within the family. But I don't know, very weird that it happened that often.
Yeah, I've read that gene. And then I also read that they have a theory now that, like, if you get your head really damaged, that you have a tendency for your whole personality change. You maybe have an up personality, but then when you hit your head really bad, you get like a change of personalities. They said that's Roseanne Barr. It was in a horrific car accident, change of personality. Meatloaf. Think about this one. He was on the he was a track star, right? But he threw the shot put and javelin and, you know, the field stuff. Someone threw a shot put like 35 feet practicing, and he was running around. It hit him in the head. It almost killed him. And his personality supposedly changed. But, you know, football players from the trauma of the head. There's a lot of them that commit suicide. So, life's tough. And, you know, shit happens that makes it tougher. You know, only strong survive.
Yep.
Yeah.
So great territory, but a horrible end. Even though you've had, you know, much success from that territory, many, many years of success there, obviously it kind of all ends pretty bad, considering it was once great, flourishing, money-driven territory for sure.
Yeah, it was like if you put everybody that ever worked there in a room and asked them if that was how it was going to end, they'd laugh you out of the building.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Absolutely crazy. But we'll talk about Dusty another day. We'll go all in-depth in a full episode on Dusty weeks down the road, of course. But let's hit the plugs. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Two Man Power Trip. Check out the website, tmptempire.com. Kevin, what do you got?
I'm in the Comic-Con at the Indianapolis this weekend. I'll be there Friday and Saturday, and come out and see me.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. See you right back here next week for a little Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. See you next week, folks. This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website, TMPTEmpire.com. And buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies. Brother.